Also, one thing that they say about Germans that we suck at sex.
What?
Dasha, what do you say about this?
Привет! Привет! Вы слушаете подкаст «Живи там хорошо». И это не Даша Полегаева и не Даша Жук. Меня зовут Филипп. Я живу хорошо в Германии.
Привет, друзья, не пугайтесь. Я Даша Жук на месте.
Я Даша Полыгаева, я живу хорошо в Дубае.
Ты живешь хорошо в Дубае, а я на месте.
А ты на месте.
Друзья, да. Друзья, мы никуда не пропали. Вы, наверное, удивились, почему у нас такое странное начало. Ну, в общем, выпуск у нас будет необычный сегодня. Наши постоянные слушатели наверняка узнали отбивку нашей любимой и единственной, в общем-то, рубрики «Повариха борща», где я учу своего мужа Филиппа русскому языку. И сегодня у нас специальный выпуск. Мы позвали главного героя этой рубрики к нам в гости, в виртуальную студию. В студии Филипп.
Привет-привет.
Привет, Даша. Привет, Даша. Очень удобно.
А я думаю, что значит «очень удобно»? Окей, очень удобно. Даша и Даша. Окей. Вы только не подумайте, что Филипп освоился настолько хорошо в русском языке, что готов сразу войти к нам в эпизод и говорить с нами на русском. Нет, нет, это была заранее подготовленная фраза. Я удивлена, как хорошо Филипп произнес мою фамилию. Действительно, очень хорошо. Но сегодня у нас, правда, экспериментальный выпуск. Мы постараемся говорить по-английски. Будем говорить с Филиппом по-английски. Надеемся, что многим нашим слушателям будет любопытно и интересно, может быть, проверить себя немножко и проверить свои знания английского, послушать подкаст на английском. Ну, а мы, конечно же, будем делать ошибки. Не судите, пожалуйста, нас строго за это.
Да, мы пишем наш подкаст поздно вечером, ну как поздно, в 8 вечера у нас в Германии, в 9 у Даши, но для Даши это уже ночь, поэтому у нас количество ошибок увеличивается раз в 10, когда мы устаем. Вот Даша сказала, что она с трудом даже по-русски говорит в это время дня,
да.
Но мы будем очень стараться.
Постараемся. Ну что, давай, погнали, Даша.
Погнали.
Этот выпуск мы записали вместе с FlowWow. Это сервис, при помощи которого можно заказать цветы и подарки с быстрой доставкой. FlowWow работает почти в 1000 городов по всему миру. Многие знают его как сервис доставки цветов, но он активно развивается сейчас, и в списке доступных товаров есть уже и книги, и косметика, и разные кондитерские изделия. Достаточно оформить заказ на сайте или в приложении, и очень быстро его доставят вам или вашим близким. Я уже пользовалась FlowWow, заказывала цветы членам семьи на важные семейные даты. И было приятно, что букеты, которые я выбрала, полностью соответствовали картинке на сайте. Заказ доставили быстро, и не пришлось лишний раз созваниваться и что-то подтверждать. С исполнителем можно списаться в чате. Это важно, когда ты за границей и хочешь порадовать тех, кто далеко. По ссылке в описании вы можете скачать приложение FlowWow. А по промокоду «Живи» мы дарим вам скидку в 10%. Промокод будет действовать до конца октября.
So, Philip, the most important question, which really disturbs me all this time, is how is your Russian?
How is this Dasha's...
No, it's...
It disturbs you all the time, really.
Actually, Dasha, yes, it was a question.
We have separate lives.
can you ask this question, please?
Maybe she also cares about your Russian, Philip, because you skip your short, episode in our podcast every time. I haven't heard you in our podcast for the last, couple of times, right? How's your Russian, Philip?
2 months, I think. Yeah. So I just...
This is a revenge.
I want to make the audience suffer. I want to make them wait for more. No, but actually, I'm just trying to hide the fact that I've been lazy.
Come on, you told me that you have a lot of work. You lied.
No, lazy to learn Russian. Work, yes, I have a lot of work. That's why I'm lazy to learn Russian.
Okay. Not to work.
He's lazy to learn Russian, I'm lazy to learn German.
Okay. I'm happy we do not speak German in this episode.
You should be, because learning Russian and learning German, it's work. Both of these languages are work.
We were talking about your horrible Russian, my horrible German. Yeah. So, Dasha, the question, the answer is no, we don't speak Russian and we don't speak German.
We try.
Okay, that's great.
So, actually, when we were thinking about inviting Philip to our podcast, we were thinking about questions. The first idea was to talk about your rich experience of living in many, many places. Can you please tell us briefly about all the countries you lived in and all the places you lived in?
Okay. Chronologically, okay? So basically places that I've lived in for more than 6 months. That was, I was born in the south of Germany, then we moved to Wales, then we moved to Berlin, after that the US, Spain, Germany, Hong Kong, Germany, France, Sweden, and China.
And now you are in Germany again. Back to the roots.
Yeah, back to the roots. Totally back to the roots. Same region that I was born in, actually.
So your dad was working abroad, right? And that's why you were moving and traveling a lot.
Yeah, exactly. It was my dad's job, basically. And so the typical thing is that when people try to guess why my family moved so much, I get two typical answers, which is either the military or diplomats. And it's very interesting to see, actually. Do you want to guess which country's name, which answer?
Military, Dasha, think.
I don't know. Military, come on. Maybe something more interesting, like to be a spy.
That's an interesting answer, but that's almost like a cliche answer in Russia, right? If you've moved abroad so much, because the cliche answer for the US is, oh, your dad must be in the military. It's like, no. And then the typical European answer is your parents must be diplomats. And the funny thing is that kind of shows you a little bit maybe about how we approach the world in a different way, how we solve our problems.
I remember actually when I just met Philip, he also, I also asked him, why did you move a lot? And I think I guessed that you moved a lot because your parents are diplomats, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And Philip told me, oh, you are like more European than American.
Is it something unusual for German family to travel that much?
So I think it was unusual at the time. So at the time, there were less families doing it, especially this extensively. So it's more and more common, especially nowadays, because, you know, German companies are all across the world in almost every continent, or definitely in every continent and in many, 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 many places. So it's very common to have families that move for 3-4 years and then come back home, like as just an international assignment. But to have this many international assignments, especially back then, was not so common.
So how was it for you? Was it tiring for you, or was it something fun for you as a kid?
Is no really simple answer to this, because you're not always the same person. When I was very young, of course, it was difficult to leave my grandma, my grandpa, my cousins and aunts and uncles, but you get used to it. I think I got used to it pretty quickly. And of course, you get so many new things going on all the time, so many distractions that you end up almost losing touch, and not necessarily forgetting the place you left behind, but definitely there's so much going on that you keep busy. So it reminds me a little bit of that saying in Iceland. It's very common there to say, if you're depressed, you must not be busy enough. And that's kind of what it is with moving. Like if you move to a new place, you're usually typically so busy with new things going on that you don't really have that much time to process. And in the end, it becomes something that's just normal. I mean, if you live in one place, you have problems. If you live in many places, you have other problems.
And do you remember which country you liked the most when you were a kid? Which country was a home for you, probably?
So I don't think I really had a home. I think home while my grandma was still alive was where my grandma was. And when she stopped living, I think I realized that home is more about the people you're surrounded with, the friends you have, the family you have, than it is about a specific physical place. Even though, of course, even nowadays, when I go back to my grandma's home and I walk around her garden, you know, all the original, the first memories come back. And the first memories are, of course, those that anchor you in life.
Okay, but which country you really liked and which one you didn't like at all?
Which place was maybe the most exciting for you? I guess Barcelona, no?
I mean, I was a teenager in Barcelona, right? So, of course, the teenage years are somehow exciting anyway. I mean, when I was in the U.S., I was...
You smoked a lot of weed?
I wasn't old enough for that.
Okay.
No, so the thing is, in the U.S., I was dependent on my family to drive me everywhere. Any time I wanted to go to the movies... or to the mall or whatever, there wasn't that much to do in the city I lived in anyway. I mean, my friends, what they typically did on the weekends was to go hunting and fishing. So they had their own guns and they would shoot animals and catch fish.
Barcelona?
No, in the U.S.
Yeah.
In the U.S. So at that age, I mean, so is that somehow exciting? Sure. But on the other hand, being in a world city when you're a teenager, being able to go out and meet all kinds of people from all across the world, and that's exciting in itself. And I mean, my parents moved back to Germany when I was 17. So I spent my last year of high school living alone, first with a friend and then with an older lady, the former colleague of my dad's. She agreed to take me in. She was like this independent older lady that believed that Catalonia should be independent of Spain, and she became something like between a grandma and a second grandma and a friend. So that, you know, those were exciting times, spending time with her family on the weekends, you know, typical Spanish lunches on Sundays with her 90 something year old mom who's still really fit, and with her kids, and they had kids, and it just, yeah, I mean, that's exciting.
And they were real like Catalan people, right?
Yeah,
I met them when we met in Barcelona. I met Philip's friends, and they are really, you know, like very passionate Catalan people who protest a lot for independence of Catalan.
First they're Catalans, then they're Europeans, and then they're not even Spanish.
We've made already an episode about third culture kids, and people we talked to for our podcast told us that one of the disadvantages of this lifestyle is not having a real home, not having a real connection with any places in the world. Did you feel like it?
That's a good question. I think I told you the other day that sometimes if I look back on my life, I almost feel like I have a Buddhist perspective on it, where I look at my life almost from the outside, like a monk contemplating his life, and almost like the things that happened didn't really happen to me, but they just kind of occurred, and I lived through them, but I wasn't those experiences. It's really weird. It's almost like sometimes I look at my life and I think it's like a film that just happened. Did I really live in Spain? Did I really live in the U.S.? Did I really live in Great Britain? And sometimes it seems unreal.
Mm-hmm. Just because it surprises you that you lived in so many places, like you are surprised by your life, or how does it feel exactly?
More like it doesn't. I think somehow there's this feeling deep down inside of me that it doesn't really matter so much where you live. And that a good life does it kind of course, somehow it depends on your external circumstances, but it depends a lot on how you feel in a place, how you are able to deal with the place rather than necessarily the external environment.
Philip, but you keep moving as an adult, right? Because you've lived in Shanghai, now you're in Germany. And as I know, guys, you're going to keep moving further. So you choose this kind of life experience as an adult as well, right? You don't want to stay in one country right now, right?
No, me personally, I don't. And I've often told Dasha that when I'm in Germany, I very often feel like an alien. I feel like a stranger here. It's like Germany feels... Actually, the thing is that, and this is, I think, quite typical for third culture kids. It's very common for people that have spent significant time during their youth living in other countries to feel at home, not in a place where people live of one specific culture, but rather where people live that that understand how to move between cultures and that are almost like cross-cultural people, trans-cultural people.
Then you need to move to Dubai, Philip.
The funny thing about Dubai, and it's a little bit like Singapore and Hong Kong in that sense, is that these cities are often full of people that go, it almost feels like they move abroad to wear trophies. So they're like, it's like a medal. Oh yeah, I'm abroad, so I'm cool. I've lived in that place, so I'm cool. But if you've grown up living like that, it's, you know, maybe it's a little bit like you grew up with money versus being new rich. And I feel like a lot of the people that live in Dubai and Singapore, Hong Kong, all these international cities, that they're new rich mm-hmm. in terms of living abroad.
I don't know. What I feel in Dubai is that many people move there because they can actually earn quite a lot of money there. And they can get really, really, really nice life there. And everything is so like cool and safe. So it's a little bit even artificial, I think. In a good way.
It's a bubble.
Yeah, it is a bubble. It's a good bubble. I've spent last 3 months in Russia and I can feel that Dubai is a really, really comfortable bubble.
Hong Kong, Singapore, Dubai, also somehow, I guess, Shanghai, these cities where you go as a foreigner, you earn good money, you don't have any troubles, life is really convenient. But also, it's very easy to move around, to travel to different places. It's very safe, it's clean. You know, you've got food from all across the world. You've got all kinds of different, cultural opportunities to some extent, I guess. Okay, I think that's something that people typically want more of in these places, more international level cultural opportunities. But nevertheless, it's a bubble and you can really disconnect there. It's almost like whatever happens in the world is not happening to us. And a lot of people, and you'll probably notice this at some point, they get a fatigue of the bubble. It's like, you know, it's been enough. It's enough now. We should reconnect with some kind of other reality.
Yeah, I think it depends on the person, of course, because when you travel to Moscow and you get stuck in a traffic jam, you're like, what the hell? It's been 4 hours. I'm still not home. I'm still going from the airport to Moscow with a little kid, for example, and the kid is screaming like, aah! And in Dubai, it's like 20, 30 minutes and you're home.
Oh, come on. But Dubai is famous for the traffic jams. No, I mean, I've been there a couple of times. I've seen traffic like crazy.
I've never been in a traffic jam in Dubai. Never. Really? Yeah, never.
What?
Really?
Maybe it changed. I don't know, yeah. Philip. Maybe have you been there? When have you been there?
The 3 years ago, then 4 years ago, 5 years ago as well. So I don't know. Maybe they improved the infrastructure, but Dubai was also quite famous for having significant traffic jams in the past. Okay, well, so definitely.
You should come, guys.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were talking about it a couple of times.
Yeah, I think it would be fun also to hang out there. And when you said also you can earn a lot of money there, and I thought, maybe we should go there to earn a lot of money. And you don't have very high taxes like we have in Germany, for example.
You don't have any, actually. It's a tax-free space.
Yeah,
basically, it's tax-free. But on the other hand, I mean, we don't have to get into the details of taxes, advantages and disadvantages. So let's go back.
Next question.
Next question.
So actually, I wanted to ask you, because we recently, and not only recently, but quite a long time ago, we talked about positive and negative side of this lifestyle when you travel all the time. Would you like our kids, Philip, to live and travel all the time, knowing all the disadvantages and advantages?
So I think, generally speaking,
no.
No, generally speaking, yes.
They have no choice.
No, they do. It's more like you as a parent don't have a choice. If your kid responds well, you keep moving. If your kid clearly doesn't respond well, and you really have to monitor that, you really have to be very aware as a parent, then, your kid decides whether you move or not. And that's very important because it's so easy to be blinded. Kids don't always show what they actually feel, if they're facing difficulties or not. And if you have a kid that in crucial years gets unrooted several times and is not able to adapt well, and if you don't have the right parenting style to handle that as well, to make the kid somehow feel like it's anchored, you will have a very troubled young person. And I've seen kids that have been broken by parents moving abroad a lot. But other kids have flourished. I mean, many people around me have responded extremely well. I mean, I've been going to schools where, I've been going to very different schools. Of course, I went to an American academy, a very conservative school in the US. I went to an international school, state school, like a government, basically, funded school in Berlin. And I went to an international school in Barcelona, which was half private. And, the kids that were moving a lot, they could either be the most open-minded, interesting people, or they could be super depressed and lost, or they could be kind of like weirdly nationalist somehow, very protective of their kind of national identity, because that's also a strategy to survive when you're in a foreign place.
You mentioned your American conservative school. I think this experience is kind of crazy. Can you please tell about this?
Where to start? So basically, in this school...
Did you have a gun?
No. My parents decided that the most fun thing to have was not for me. Both in the US, a gun, and in Barcelona, a scooter. Also, I was not allowed to have a scooter.
No?
No, I got my license. You know what? My parents, they tricked me. They said, yeah, okay, get your license and then we'll see. And so I got my license for the scooter. And then they were like, okay, look, the thing is, scooters are really dangerous. So we promise you a car when you're 18. Just don't go on a scooter. I was like, ah, okay, it's only 2.5 more years. Then I'll just wait for the car. And then boom, I was 18. Oh, what a surprise. No car. Come on, you don't need a car. You're in a city where you don't need a car.
Okay, and what about your conservative childhood? Like, how did your parents no scooter, no gun. How did your parents allow you to go to a very conservative place? Were they aware of it?
I don't think they were aware of it. It was one of the most conservative schools, or maybe the most conservative school, in one of the most conservative states in the US. And I mean, really kind of like...
Which one? Texas? No,
the South Carolina. You know Charleston, right? And you know the old plantations where they used to own slaves, and defend those rights for a very long time. That's very, very backward place. I mean, we had black people move into our house after, you know what? No, cut this. It's too political. Cut it.
Cenzura.
Yeah, I mean, so this school, really, my parents weren't aware. And that's what I mean with that parents need to be aware of what they're doing to their kids. It was a private school because the school system there was so terrible that we had to go to a private school. And there, you know, you had to put your shirt into your pants, and you had to have your pants in a certain position, and you had to cut your ears free your ears from hair, so your hair couldn't grow over your ears. There was religion, religious classes regularly, where you had to memorize passages from the Bible every morning. They sang the national anthem, and regularly they sang the school song as well. It's kind of like a sect. And all of this surrounded by then kids who, well, as I mentioned earlier, they went fishing and hunting and they had guns, and some of them even had shotguns. I mean, imagine 13-year-olds with shotguns shooting snakes in their backyards. and their parents would then be like, oh, you know, we won't have alcohol in front of the kids. Or they drink alcohol hidden, maybe in a brown bag so that their kids don't see that they're drinking. And then these same kids go binge drinking later when they're old enough to kind of either buy alcohol or get alcohol through friends. and they drink like crazy because alcohol is something so special. And then these same parents, I mean, one father of one of my school friends, he used to hit his child, and hitting in that area, hitting your children, was relatively common at that time. Still, I don't know if it still is. I mean, that was more than 20 years ago. He used to hit his kid with a boat paddle. Imagine a wooden boat paddle. And he put holes in the boat paddle so the boat paddle would have less wind resistance so he could hit more quickly to hurt his kid more. But yeah, but then he has to protect his kid from alcohol. How about protecting him from his father? Like, it's a really weird sect full of hypocrites, and I'm glad I haven't been back.
I see why you don't want to move back to the US.
I mean, of course, this is not representative for you know, people keep thinking, oh, you know, New York and San Francisco and LA and Miami and all these wonderful places that are so dynamic and vibrant. And then it's, yeah, we'll just go off the beaten path, go to some back country, North Carolina, where you still have people living lives like 100 years ago.
This is crazy.
It's like our Siberia, maybe some our Siberian villages.
Yeah, like that. Exactly like that.
But did this experience make you a protester, Philip, back then? Like, because you had to protest against the system.
Well, there wasn't much protest possible. It was if you didn't stick to the rules, you were suspended or even kicked out. But as far as I could protest, I at one point decided, look, I'm German. I'm not going to sing the national anthem. And then my teachers were actually okay with it. So in the end, some kind of protest, I guess, but also not much resistance from the teachers.
They were like, it makes sense. He is German, so he wouldn't care much.
But you know, when I first arrived to that school, there was this one kid who basically told me to go home. He was like, you go home to where you came from. It's like, what are you talking about? I mean, even if I could, I mean, I can't just pack my bags, leave. I kind of depend on my parents, but even if I could, I wouldn't. And who the hell are you to tell me to go back home? I'm here now. And, but anyway, so you can experience discrimination anywhere really. And yeah, I mean, we can get into racism. We can get into racism now, but or also maybe too political, censura.
Oh, maybe let's skip this topic. Yeah. I'd like to ask you about this thing. You know, many Russians, they discuss that there is a certain attitude towards Russians abroad. Like, many people joke that we're spies or we're connected to Russian mafia. And some people think that some or many Russian women are prostitutes if they live abroad or if they travel abroad. Do you feel that people sometimes maybe frame you like a German, not only in the United States, but when you, as an adult, you live abroad and you work abroad. Do you feel something like this?
Yeah, somehow, sure. I mean, of course, the obvious thing is for people to be like, Nazi. It's not very common to be called a Nazi nowadays.
Seriously?
No, yeah, I mean, I remember somewhere someone being like Nazi. I think it was in the US, but it's not very common. I mean, it's too far away somehow, and Germany has done too many things that are really unrelated to the Nazis to be considered. It's not so simple, right? There's just too much going on around Germany, too much economic stuff, political stuff that's absolutely unrelated. So I think there's been a lot of stuff covered, but let's be honest, if you watch American TV on the History Channel, you've got Nazi documentaries running a third of the time, 50% of the time. It's about World War II and the Nazis, and that still somehow is there. I mean, in Spain, there were these neo-Nazi teenagers that said, oh, you're German, cool, Heil Hitler. They raised their arms saluting. It's like, oh, awesome, we want to be like you, we want to be Aryans. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Do you even know what you're saying? It's just, you know, they were teenagers, so probably they didn't know what they were talking about. But Yeah, somehow the Nazi idea is still there. And then other things that Germans are typically connected with is, you know, Germans don't have humor. Germans are always punctual, and Germans are very precise. And
somehow it's true. Philip is very precise.
And a little bit people, and the Germans are really boring. And the funny thing is that then the most common thing I hear when I travel is, well, you know what? You're the least German I know. Okay, great. I guess that's a compliment. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not. Also, one thing that they say about Germans that we suck at sex.
What?
Yeah. That's a European cliche. The best lovers are Italians, then maybe French, and somehow Germans end up at the end of the spectrum. Dasha, what do you say about this?
I've heard the same joke actually about Russian men, that they also suck in sex. Because, you know, like, I'm Russian, I'm a communist, I don't care about sex.
What?
Yeah, I've heard these jokes, but not not in Russia, but abroad in Europe.
That communists don't care about sex, but communists were fucking all day.
I'm happy, guys, that we're talking about sex, not about Dubai taxes now. It's much more fun.
It will attract more audience, I hope. Okay, let's talk more about maybe Russia. Philip, you traveled to Russia. You've traveled to Russia 4 times. And I remember how you told me that Russia is one of the most exotic places in the world. Why do you find Russia like this? Why do you think so?
Yeah, why is Russia so exotic to me? I said that a couple of years ago, so you're nailing me down on something that I said a long time ago. But anyway, I'll try to explain what I think I said back then. Why I said it is because Russia is enormous. Russia is almost incomprehensible just in terms of geographical size. And also, the same is true for the language. You can't really wrap your mind around that. So it's extremely complicated. I think Russia is kind of a mind fuck, because on the one hand, it's European. And on the other hand, it's absolutely not European. It's more like Asian. So you've got some Chinese influences in terms of, let's say, for example, the horoscope, or maybe some of your fundamental ways of looking at the world. You're kind of collectivist, but you're definitely strongly individualist. You've got European heritage, but then you've got so much influence of around you from your border regions. You know, I don't know, Mongols, Han Chinese culture. You've got all the Caucasus regions that have definitely put their influence into Russian culture as well somehow, and all of this is like, you go there and you think, hey, it's a European country. I'm surrounded by, you know, white, Eastern European looking people. And in the end, you don't really understand what's going on. What are the rules? It's so far away. And I think the main thing that makes it so exotic somehow as well is, I think this is the main reason. It's coming back to me why I said it back then. Is the information you get from Russia is very, very limited. For a very long time, the image in the West was predominantly influenced by, you know, movies. And what were those movies about? They were about the Cold War. They were about spies. They were about, maybe prostitutes as well. But they definitely didn't show the rich cultural heritage that you have. And somehow there's so much under the surface, which we don't really get to access here. Even nowadays, we don't hear that much about daily Russian life. What do Russian people think? How do Russian people live? And people don't travel that much to Russia as to other countries. I mean, I remember this one time I was getting my visa. When I was in China, I was getting my visa to Russia, and there was this visa center. And in this visa center, basically all countries have some kind of office. Okay. And there were so many people entering the building. I was like, oh my God, this is going to take 3 hours, 4 hours until I get my documents there. And then I took ages to get to the elevator. And then there were more people as well upstairs. And then finally I passed all these people And, you know, people were trying to get to Germany, trying to get to Spain, trying to get to France. And then I went to the Russian section and there was no one, not a single person. I was the only person there trying to get a visa to Russia. And this is, I think, part of the reason why Russia is so exotic, just because we don't have that level of information that we have about other countries.
I just want to say that many, you know, Russian people, they don't get a lot of information about daily Russian life as well. Those Western people.
So that's conscious, huh?
Yeah. You should keep learning Russian.
I will. Don't worry.
So should we talk about something else, or like we have some several questions?
I feel like it was a very analytical episode. I mean, I would be happy to end with some jokes.
End with some jokes? Did you prepare some jokes?
You know, because this is the way people joke. They prepare some jokes.
Hello, my name is Philip, and these are my jokes.
So, Philip, I actually wanted to ask you, like, you lived in Shanghai for 6 years.
Seven.
For six and a half.
Whatever.
Okay.
I'm not so German. I'm not so precise. Six, seven.
And same. Philip, I should tell you, Dasha, that Philip, he's a huge food lover. He is very, very foodie person, and he loves Chinese food, and now he has to eat a lot of German food, which he likes somehow, but not as much as Chinese food. So Philip, do you miss dumplings?
Yeah, I miss dumplings, of course. I miss, you know, Russians love khinkali, right? I think that most of the Russians I've met have loved khinkali, and Shanghai has a very delicate, small version of khinkali, which is xiaolongbao, and you can put them in your mouth basically in one bite, and they have very thin skin, so they're not as thick, they're not as tough, they're not as heavy, they're much more elegant than khinkali. And for me, that is one of the, like, you know, God lowered his hand down to earth a few times, and one time he lowered his hand, there was xiaolongbao inside.
I think we need to make a full episode about food of different countries. We're going to talk like for 3 hours about food.
Philip would like to make a podcast about food and making foods, like different cultures. He would like to make Russian food for me, right, Philip? You told me.
Yeah, yeah. Povar borsha becomes povar everything.
Povar of everything.
How do you say everything?
Повар всего.
Повар всего.
Все.
Повар все.
Повар все.
Повар все. It's something about me.
Okay.
Which means I'm done.
You done? Yeah. Okay, Dasha. So I think you need to sleep. So спокойной ночи.
Спокойной ночи.
Спокойной ночи, Филипп. Thank you very much.
Спасибо.
Пока-пока.
Пока.
Пока-пока, друзья. Живите там хорошо. Philip, can we say live there well?
It's not perfect, but people will understand.
Okay.
Live there well.